Even if the prospect of a third-party run is dim, the driving force behind the idea blazes bright. The sense that this election poses a threat to the party system as we know it, that this year could produce what eminent political scientist Walter Dean Burnham famously termed a critical election, leading to a political realignment and historic reshuffling. It happened after the 1932 election, when the Democratic Party created a majority base around African Americans, farmers, and Southern whites, and after 1968, when civil rights became a national issue, Southern whites gravitated toward the Republican Party. Burnham calls critical elections surrogates for revolution, when pressure from an unresponsive political establishment accumulates like gas from a faulty valve.
Then a triggering event occurs. It can be anything. Back in the 1850s, it was the passage of an act that opened up parts of the free West to slavery, for example. Mm-hmm. In the 1890s, it turned out to be the battle over silver versus gold in the currency. And in the 1930s, it had a lot to do with, of course, the great smash-up when unemployment was 25% in some places. And where I was, in Pittsburgh, it was 35%. That was real misery. And the Republicans always claimed they knew how to manage a modern economy, and that argument perished along with the stock market crash in 1929.
And 1968?
The triggering event were several-fold happening simultaneously. One of them is the civil rights movement, which already had begun to impose a second Reconstruction on the Jim Crow regime in the South. The other was, of course, the Vietnam War, which was intensely unpopular and got more and more so as you approach the end of Johnson's administration. And then the Democrats parachuted in Hubert Humphrey, who never entered any primaries, at the last minute to head off the insurgents under Gene McCarthy and, until he was assassinated, Bobby Kennedy. The establishment won out, but there was a riotous convention in Chicago.
Burnham says that what we seem to be undergoing now is part of a realignment. The country and its institutions are shifting in segments, a process that began with the transformation of economic policy in the Reagan administration, the first part of what he calls a realignment sequence. Now, after a slow build, come the triggering events, caused by the deepening disconnect between the government and the governed, and caused not just by Reaganomics, but also bipartisan trade agreements, the outsourcing of factory jobs, and a lot more.
What that did was create a bifurcated society. The folks who were plugged into the high tech, who were plugged into adequate education, they're part of the blessed. The ones who wound up in high school, whose fathers and grandfathers used to be able to get nice jobs in manufacturing so they could actually run what they called a middle-class existence, these guys are part of the cursed. A triggering event with a longer time frame was the great crash of 2008-2010. That was the second worst crash in more than 100 years. While the banks got out scot-free, and while at the same time those at the very top were making out like bandits, this was a case in which elite malfeasance and nonfeasance played an extraordinarily important role. And that paved the way for, among other things, the abrupt emergence of the Tea Party in 2009, followed by the collapse of the Democrats in 2010 at all levels of election.
Is this realignment going on just within the GOP?
No, look at Sanders. He beat Hillary in Indiana, of all places, a socialist from the smallest state in the union, practically, who bangs away at the basic issues of economic malfeasance and nonfeasance affecting very large parts of the population. It's reflective of a fragmented political system, which is in the grips of a basic crisis of identity and a basic crisis of legitimacy.
I leaned on Burnham for a historical analogy to today, and after some pressure, he came up with the election of 1854, spurred in part by the opening of vast tracts of the West to slavery. But not only that.
It was a case when one of the parties was destroyed absolutely, another was crippled, a third arose from absolutely nowhere, and it had nothing to do with the Republicans initially. It was the Know-Nothings, the Americans, the ones who really wanted to go on a hunt for Irish Catholics and were not interested in slavery, sectionalism, or anything else. It's where we had the largest influx of immigration proportionate to the size of the resident population we ever had. I mean, it's exactly where a lot of the support for the Tea Party came from in 2009. They are very, very committed to the notion that we need to take our country back again. From whom? I assume blacks, other minorities. Take a look at the rise of Donald Trump. He's not only a master showman, but he's also a symptom. He entered into something that was a total vacuum. The establishment completely lost control of the situation and never regained it, because polarization has reached heights never before seen in modern times. You've got to go back to somewhere around the Civil War era to find its parallel in roll call voting.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome, and good luck.
Walter Dean Burnham is Professor Emeritus at the University of Texas at Austin. Sean Wilentz is the George Henry Davis 1886 Professor of American History at Princeton University. And he says that this is the year when a political cliché comes true. It may actually be the most important election of your lifetime.
The point is that we're at a crossroads, and the country's either going to become one thing or the other. And this has been building up for 40 years. The Republican Party is in control of most of the state houses. They have control of the House of Representatives. They have control of the Senate. And until Justice Scalia's demise, it was a very conservative court. So they were in control of everything except the White House. If a Republican does win the White House, one party will be in control of American government from stem to stern. If the Democrat wins, it's a reasonable likelihood that the Senate will fall back into Democratic hands. And with the Scalia vacancy, then the Supreme Court would look extraordinarily different than it would if a Republican were elected.
How would you situate this moment in the history of partisan politics?
Well, at one level, it's sui generis. The history of American politics has never seen a figure like Donald Trump before. But in other ways, I mean, American elections are never identical, but they sometimes rhyme with each other. Watching the television today, actually, and watching what's going on inside the Republican Party, it looks like something that happened more than a century ago. And that's when two political parties dissolved, first the Whigs and then the Democrats in 1854 and then in 1860.
That's what Walter Dean Burnham said.
Oh, well, maybe I am a political scientist. You know, the Whig Party split in two over the slavery issue, and they could not hold it together. I mean, with Republicans, including both Bush presidents and the last nominee, saying they will not go to the convention, we might be seeing, perhaps over the next year, something that would be truly extraordinary, which would be the dissolution of a major American political party.
You don't really think that's going to happen, do you?
It's not 1854. It's only rhyming.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not over slavery in quite the same way. What is the most solid base of the Republican Party today? It's the white male South. The strongest element in the base of the Democratic Party are African Americans. That sounds a lot like the Civil War to me. The Republican Party leadership, ever since Reagan, thought that they could, you know, hold together basically a billionaire class party by appealing to the racial and other social stuff and keep those people riled up and call on them every 2 years and certainly every 4 years to bring them back into power. That base got fed up. They weakened the party structure. It became a very cynical game.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no party there. It was bound to happen eventually. And they started going down that road because, in fact, there was nobody who could succeed Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan was one of a kind. There was no conservative to replace him. So you started with George H.W. Bush, and you started with Gingrich coming up to challenge him, and then the dialectic began. But in effect, the old party was badly, badly weakened. There's no center to the Republican Party as a result. That is not unlike what happened in 1854.
Sean, thank you very much.
Brooke, it's been a delight as ever.
Sean Wilentz is the George Henry Davis 1886 Professor of American History at Princeton University.
Coming up, is Puerto Rico now paying the price of its bad behavior or the price of ours? As an example of an underdeveloped land that is going through an industrial revolution without violence and without communism, Puerto Rico has been called a showcase of America.
This is On the Media.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.